As the van rolled past the Champ de Mars, a single ray of sun broke through the heavy evening clouds. It shone like a searchlight on the flag fixed to the top of the Eiffel Tower. The fabric stretched itself out, a scarlet slap against the muted purple of the early autumn sky. At its centre glowed a circle, white as death. Lucie squinted at the thick black symbol deformed in the folds of flapping cloth. One moment they looked like eyes and a mouth narrowed in anger, the next like arms raised in stiff salute. She'd first seen the huge black swastikas in newsreels of Hitler and his Nazi party, his rallies at Nuremberg, the Olympic Games in Berlin. At the time, she'd found the symbols harsh and ugly. Here, the bloody redness of the flag was even more disturbing. She peered through the van's dusty windscreen as they crossed the Pont de l'Alma, drove along the Avenue Montaigne, and advanced slowly along the long tree-lined avenue of the Champs-Élysées. Behind the wheel, Gérard was silent, his jaw uncharacteristically slack. From the corner of her eye, Lucie noticed the skin under his chin, loose and trembling with the jolting of the wheels on the cobblestones. As they arrived on the Place de la Concorde, Lucie turned towards the National Assembly building on the other side of the Seine. A giant white V had been fixed to the ornate stone pediment. Below, a banner stretched across the row of massive columns. In huge black letters, it declared, "Deutschland siegt an allen Fronten," Germany victorious on all fronts. As they rounded the empty square, more red flags came into view, huge and glaring, covering the delicate stonework of theatres and hotels. Along the Rue Rivoli, they hung one after another, aligned and spaced with military precision, thick branding irons stamped onto the city's skin. Gothic-lettered street signs, black on white, pointed to new and fearful-sounding landmarks, Commandant von Gross Paris, De Militar Befehlshaber. Lucie pinched the inside of her forearm and twisted till it ached. "This isn't a nightmare," a voice inside her head repeated. "This is real. This is real." Despite the warmth of the September evening, the avenues and boulevards were deserted. The streetlights had been painted blue as a precaution against air raids. They created an impression of a city submerged. The streets were silent, the only sound the creak of a handcart pulled by an old woman disappearing under the arches of the long arcades. And then she heard it, the click, click, click of the boots of a German patrol echoing off the stone facades. Lucie craned her neck and peered along each side street as they drove past, but the source of the sound remained hidden from view. As the sun turned the sky from pink to orange, the van cut in front of the Louvre and crossed the Pont Royal. On the far side of the river, she noticed that the clock on the Orsay railway station was an hour fast. When she mentioned it, Gérard replied sullenly that it had been set to Berlin time. In Paris, there was no evidence of the bombings Lucie had seen so much of in the past 2 months. On the road that had brought them back up from the south, the carcasses of vehicles were still where they'd broken down or burnt during the exodus in June. The craters made by the Stuka's bombs now filled with autumn rain. Only the decomposing bodies had been removed.